So let's start by telling me a little bit about yourself. Do you know where you're from in China, and how old were you when you came home?
I was born in Beijing, China, so the capital, and I came to the U.S. when I was 4, April 6th, 1999.
Do you know if you were in an orphanage or were you in foster care?
I was in definitely an orphanage. It was a welfare children's institute, so it wasn't just an orphanage. There was a school involved. There were like 2,000 kids, so it's huge, ranging from newborns, like 1 day old, to 16 when they're being kicked out at 16. So there's a school for preschool, for middle school, for up until 16.
And you came home at 4. Tell me a little bit about your adoptive mom, right?
Well, my adoptive mom is, she was a workaholic most of her life, and then she found out when she decided to retire at 56, that, which was quite young, still quite young, to be retired, that something was missing in her life. She was kind of empty, and so she decided that since she never married, never had her kids of her own, and that what was missing was a child, a preferred girl, and so she was considering where to adopt. It was ranging from like Russia, China, other parts of Asia. She wanted a girl. She wanted a daughter who was a bit older, because she didn't want a newborn. Too much work, I guess. And so somehow, you know, when she did all the paperwork and sent it off, somehow in China at the Welfare Institute, we were a match. And I guess fate goes on from there. So
she was 56. How old was she when you came home?
56.
So you come home at 4. Mm-hmm. Presumably you were talking a lot. Did you know any English?
Nope. Zero. Zero. I didn't know English. I knew, I still have some memories, very few memories from my experience in the orphanage. But I remember the day our meeting day, that we had an interpreter, and that I didn't know. I knew somehow that I was going to go home with her, but I didn't know she was my mom. Like, you know, at 4, you don't really understand that whole situation. And I just thought, oh, she's another person and I actually get to leave this place, you know? And so, you know, that day was happy, and it was very easy to be attached to her and everything. And then once the night came, it was like, boom, you know, I was unhappy, crying a lot, hard to sleep. There was a funny story of when she tried to, you know, like I needed to go to the bathroom or something. But in China, you don't go the natural way in Western culture. And so she put me on the toilet the Western way. And I thought I was going to, you know, be sucked in the hole. So I was like crying and she didn't understand. So then the interpreter was like, no, that's not how you do it here. And so, you know, that type of thing, you know, we because we didn't know each other's language at all, it was all, you know, nonverbal, and it was all gestures, and it was either crying or laughing, and that was how we communicated. And then when I arrived in California, in Berkeley, I slowly learned 6 years of English in 2 years.
Was there anyone, like a babysitter or a nanny, or was there any, were you speaking Mandarin in China, do you know?
In China, I was definitely speaking Mandarin, but when I came to the U.S., well, in the orphanage, I remember that there were caretakers, like kind of nannies, but I didn't have a particular one, because it's just so massive of a place that it's impossible to have that type of attention. And so then when I arrived to the States, my mom decided not to really do babysitting or have a nanny. She wanted to be there 24/7. So she was really the one who taught me English, taught me like this is water, what things were. We would go to parks a lot and, you know, zoos and try and experience what things were.
So over time, you, in kind of constant company of your mom, you learned the language. Do you have any sense of how old you were when it clicked?
When, like, the language clicked?
When English clicked. When you...
It still doesn't click. It's, I think the just speaking clicked when I was, you know, like, maybe, like, 10. you know, with just going to school and speaking more English just with, you know, people around myself and at home and things like that. So speaking came on much better than writing, comprehension. I'm still learning all those things. I mean, it's embarrassing to admit, but it's a challenge. It's still a challenge for me.
So in school, did you have help with reading comprehension and with kind of acquiring reading and written language?
Yes. Once my mom knew that I was having some trouble with understanding what I was reading in school, it was about third, fourth grade. So I'd been like eight around there. My mom found an English tutor, and so I had English tutoring for until like sixth, seventh grade, helping me with not only just reading, but, well, I mean, I could read and, you know, read out loud, like that was perfectly fine, but to understand what was important, comprehending what I was reading, being able to summarize, because I remember in English class, elementary school, we would have those, like, book summaries that you would have to do in, like, one page or something. And so she helped me with sentence structure and trying to, you know, write properly.
Did you have any sense that from being assessed in school or teachers or anything, was there any sense that it was because you learned English language late that it naturally it might take a little longer to come along with comprehension?
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I didn't realize that was one of the main problems of why it was taking me a longer time back then. But now it, you know, when you get older, you kind of understand more about your, you know, beginning days that, you know, it makes sense. It's totally, it totally makes sense that things are slower for me. I have to work harder to just understand. And, you know, that's something that's frustrating to me today is I feel a lot of people don't quite understand that because it's just not really, adoptees aren't really heard about, especially in Berkeley and stuff like that. Although, you know, tons of different families are here in Berkeley, which is amazing part. But like in school, ever since I was, you know, in elementary school, second grade, you know, people would comment that I was small, you know, all these comments, you know, that I was small, I was slow, I was, you know, behaving in a weird way, I was weird, I was a loner, you know, all those things. And, you know, for a long, long time, and then it got worse as I got older, unfortunately, not like when I was in elementary school days, I didn't really understand why they were doing that. And I didn't really understand them just because of just, you know, being here older and not having those 4+ years that they have of all of that stimulation, you know, going to preschool properly, and the social life is so different, and, you know, they never lived in an orphanage that I lived in, and, you know, but because we were both so young, we just didn't understand, and it's a difficult thing still, because I can still see it's a struggle, so.
When I asked you where you go to school, if you went to Berkeley, you said, I wish I go to Berkeley City University,
City College. Yeah, College.
So what's the I wish? What's behind the I wish?
Well, just Berkeley, UC Berkeley is just so awesome. And, you know, it's actually the top 10 schools in America, and just always would have been, you know, kind of feather in your cap type of thing, at least for me. I mean, I've been lucky enough to go to such amazing, prestigious schools, you know, private school for elementary, middle school, and then a very top 100 public school, high school for my high school years. But I think it's just like, you know, a little extra for me to like say, oh, wow, you know, I actually, not only am I in college, but I'm at a really good school. I think that's kind of the story behind it. I just wish I could actually be happy that, yeah, I did work hard to get here, you know, instead of kind of taking the easier route. That's just, I'm just very self-critical though, so.
Sounds like the kids were not so nice. Maybe the self-critical thing comes a little by having had early experiences with, I mean, were there many kids in your school who were Asian, was it diverse ethnically, or?
Well, elementary school was private school in Berkeley, and from what I remember, it was more diverse than other, you know, private schools, I must say, but wasn't that diverse. There were, majority were white, and there were one, maybe a couple of Asians, and then hardly any African Americans until, you know, a little bit later in elementary school, and then definitely in middle school, we doubled in size, so there were 45 something in total, so we added a few more diverse people, but that's about it. And yeah, it's true, they weren't very nice, some of them. I mean, I must say that some of them were very nice, but a lot of them weren't too. But also, you know, when we're that age, we all do. I mean, I'm one of them too, because, you know, what I saw, how they were saying things about me, I just said, you know, the same things back to them, kind of thinking that was okay. But then, you know, I would get spanked for that. Well, not spanked, but you know, they told me, like, what, that's like so wrong. And I felt so bad, because, but then I didn't understand that, you know, you can't do that to them. And yet, even if you're being, you know, the victim of it too, that you can't really, you know, still do it.
Not ideal to give what you get, as tempting as it may be.
Yeah. So I learned that. I learned that quick. But they kept still doing it, so.
Sounds like at least when you were quite young in elementary school, they really didn't, as you said, they didn't understand that you had come the first 4 years of your life. You had lived in a very different setting and didn't have the same kinds of experiences that they did, and they didn't understand how that might have manifested itself in your behaving differently or sounding different. What do you remember from the orphanage?
I remember, I just remember a few things, a couple. I remember what we ate, which was congee, which is actually a southwestern porridge, rice porridge in China, it's basically just rice porridge, and you can put whatever in it to make it healthier. So I just remember that as the staple food that we all had. And then I remember our beds. So I remember my bed number, where it was located in the room, how big the room was, how, you know, and it was a room for toddlers. And I remember that the bed was so small, and we were all so small. I mean, when I was 4, I was apparently 24 pounds, which is quite crazy, because I didn't look malnourished or anything like that. But I remember the bed was, because they had to put so many kids in one room, that our beds were so much smaller than us that we had to sleep in an L shape. So we couldn't even sleep properly. We were always, like, leaned over. And so I remember that. And then I remember being in preschool, being in this room, and there was like this easel in the front of the room having like yellow paper ducks with like red Chinese numbers, and I think we were like learning how to read or something, and I was writing, it was some type of, it felt intense, I'm not sure why. But then at the end of it, the teacher has like this like metal ruler or something, and everyone's crying, and of course there's a whole line of kids, including myself, who get spanked for some reason, on the wrist or the hand, the palm of the hand. I just remember that it was very painful, and we were all crying, and we, you know, at like 3 and a half, 4, you don't understand why. You know, we're just kids, we're just toddlers, we're just trying our best. And yet, you know, a lot of the people there were very nice, like my nannies were very nice. So it's just a very weird situation of they're being spanked, and you don't understand why, and yet people are nice.
It may be that their way of teaching, you know, in school, if you were in preschool or something, it's like the old days in the U.S. when they used corporal punishment.
Yeah, luckily now in China, they're not spanking kids so much, so that's good.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. So how did things develop as you moved through school and high school, and what are you interested in? What did you develop kind of an interest in? What are you studying?
Well, I'm still figuring out what I'm studying. It's a lifelong process. Life change everything. I am studying, when I was in elementary school, it was just very hard to write. Math was very difficult, test taking. And it continued into high school. But, you know, I work hard, incredibly hard, I hope, you know, to try and do well in everything I do. And, of course, the grades don't necessarily, you know, like, especially in high school. I used to be a very straight-A student in the private school at elementary, middle school, very straight-A. But then in high school, because it was so much about test-taking, that it's such a skill. And, unfortunately, my black paint circle didn't really, I mean, that was one, you know, weakness that they have, to be honest, is that they didn't really teach us the skills that we needed to be a good test taker, or at least I didn't learn that. It wasn't an emphasis. And so in high school, it was a huge jump. It was a huge shock. And so I became a B student, and it really affected my ego and stuff like that, but not really too bad. But yeah, it definitely changed, you know, the way I thought about school. School was still difficult, but my interest came as, you know, ever since I knew what a book was, I was fascinated with the human body, and I wanted to be a doctor. That was my dream job. I first wanted to be an obstetrician because I love babies. I love the whole reproductive system. I thought that was fascinating. And so I wanted to be a doctor for the longest of time. And so for like about 10 years, so until I was about 10 or something, my dream was, you know, to be an OBGYN. And then it turned into pediatrics because I love kids. And I heard that there was so much blood, you know, in OBGYN, I was like, okay, maybe not that, where, you know, it's a bit gross. So maybe just kids. And so I wanted to be a pediatrician, and then it turned into surgeon because I'm very good with detail, apparently. And so it just kind of, you know, like changed over time of my interest in, but I, for, you know, for like until sophomore year of high school, then I really thought maybe doctor isn't quite the field to go. It's very intense. I don't do well under stress or high stress levels. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe nursing, because I've always tried to be a compassionate and caring type of person to others. And so I thought, well, nursing, that's the main focus, is actually taking care of the patients and making a conversation with them, being there the whole journey that they're going through, whatever it is. And I thought I would be really good at that. So that's what my focus was right after applying to college, and then right after when I went to a small private school in Oregon, was I basically applied there and went there because of nursing. But then I decided that although I, you know, some subjects in nursing were totally of my interest and I might go back, who knows, that everything else about it was not to my liking at all and was quite difficult. So I was like, well, you know, instead of having that mindset, which I always had ever since, you know, elementary school, of like, okay, it's temporary. It just, you know, you're getting good education, you know, you have great teachers, you know, you're, and just think about the career. You know, that was my whole mindset until when I went to college. I was like, you know what? I'm tired of that. I'm tired of just thinking about the career, thinking about that this is temporary. I hate the school. I'm not happy at the school. I'm miserable. I'm like, I would rather just start over, no matter how hard that will be, and just actually take it one day at a time and not think about, you know, what will my career be? What will I get a job immediately after this? Like, you know, not think about all of that. Just think, do I actually like the environment I'm in? Do I like the people I'm surrounded by? Things like that now.
And you come home and you started here. When did you start here? Is this all fairly recent that you began here?
Yeah.
At Berkeley City?
Yes, it is. I started just last fall. So fall of 2015.
So really, in a way, it's like you've taken control of your, you've kind of, if I may say so, you're in a very important part of your narrative arc, in that you said to yourself something quite liberating, which is, I think I'm going to figure out what I really like and not what I think I should necessarily do later. You know what I mean? Like, is it a career? Is it a career? Maybe you feel like you're flailing around a little bit now, but maybe that's how you kind of get at the real thing that will be for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think everyone comes to that point. I just think what was difficult is at least ever since I, you know, have been in school and everything, I've always have sensed the, maybe because my whole school environment was very competitive. I don't know if that's the case. I mean, everyone I was with were very highly intelligent, you know, very smart, you know, all these things, very well-rounded people. And maybe I just felt like, because I was so different already, that, you know, I couldn't live to that expectation that they always just naturally seem to have. And so I always sensed a vibe that we had to, the students had to, or just we as children, or, you know, soon, call whatever age we are in school, you know, had to, you know, get always straight A's. Be like, you know, not only straight A, but and in the honor society, but like, you know, have all these extracurriculars like volunteering, like varsity, you know, like sports after school, and also, you know, having a social life and all these things that we like. I felt just, it's probably not, no one told me it's not a rule, like I know that, but it's just this vibe that you have to be a certain way or to do certain things and like, ooh, wow, you're great, you know? And I know that's probably totally irrational, but I just always had that sense I had to do that, and yet, you know, I couldn't do it like everyone else. And I still don't quite understand that difference, but, you know, I think it's just having that vibe that I, you know, like, think about the careers, what are you doing for, you know, for college, like, you know, I'm applying to all these, you know, Ivy League schools, or like, I want to be a doctor and go to, you know, Stanford and then UCSF, and having all these plans, and being surrounded by that all the time is quite stressful, and thinking also that yourself had to be that way, and yet whatever you did, you know, didn't quite match your satisfactory levels. Maybe mine, it's because mine are so high. But, you know, having that just, it's just so tiring after 13, 15 years of that. And so I've just come to the realization that it wasn't making me happy, and, you know, I have to do it for myself now. Because I just can't have that mindset of what is, you know, the 5-year plan, what is, you know, because that's what I was doing the whole time, and that's what I was seeing everyone else doing. And, you know, still today, like, when I talk to, like, some of my college friends in at UCLA, New York, wherever, and how they're talking about, oh my goodness, I have to, you know, it's like, and they're juniors in college, and they're, like, already talking about, oh my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to do for my job after school, and, like, I have to apply to graduate school, but I don't know where. And, like, I have to, like, you know, do all these things. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I mean, I know it's like, true. And we all want to reach the highest point all the time. But I'd rather just be satisfied. Like, I would rather just be just happy. You know, that, like, okay, yeah, I'm actually in college. Like, oh, my goodness, I am enjoying that it's a beautiful day today. You know, just the simple things of life that I think are very vital to our happiness. So I've kind of come to that, like, oh, you know, like, level.
And where's your mom in all this? Does she feel okay about your newfound peace of mind? Or did she want you to be a doctor? Or should I not ask?
I'm not really sure. I mean, it's, I think, her story to say. But from my point of view, I feel that she's been very, over the years, she's become more open. I always thought in elementary school, and probably she might disagree, whatever, you know, it's really for her to say. But to me, I always felt she judged me. She, you know, was like, every time after, you know, like, ever since maybe middle school, but yeah, ever since middle school, I felt like, you know, she's like, oh, you know, what did you do? Like, it was very nice to have conversations about that, but then it was like, oh, you know, like, what is your homework? Like, what, you know, like, do you need help with this homework? You know, so I would get a good grade. Or like, oh, wow, like, I, you know, I always felt like I would be judged if, you know, I got a B or a C. Or, like, that's why it was very hard for me to say, I actually didn't do well on this test. And I think that's one thing that's, you know, important, is that to actually, you know, be more open to not just this good B, A grades, but to also be okay with, like, just maybe a C for once, you know, and not that I'm saying that's good, but I'm just saying, you know, to acknowledge that it's not terrible. It's not, like, detrimental to your life, you know, which is kind of, like, the mindset I always had that, oh, my goodness, I'm not, you know, I'm not getting straight A's. I'm not, you know, getting B's on certain, like, papers or something. And I felt like I always had to, you know, that my mom was going to be judging of that. And I'm sure it wasn't her intention, but it was always that feeling. And also just her background. I mean, it's so, like, amazing. Not, like, it's, like, you just cannot reach that level or reach any higher than she already has. So it's kind of like having that was a lot of pressure as well. But now, you know, after as she's seen my school journey, you know, and have seen how much I've tried to work, and she's acknowledged I've had to work twice as hard as regular people my age, most of them I was around. And so understanding of that, she helped me a lot with getting tutors, speech pathologists, you know, so getting the support that she thought I needed and I thought I might need. And, you know, getting that extra help was very wonderful and still is. And then in high school, you know, she kind of drifted away from, you know, my homework, which was great because I wanted to, like, just be in charge of it. So she kind of let me be a little bit more independent. She was still very overbearing of, you know, the things I was doing and stuff like that. But and then once I got into college, moved away, I think that was a good plus. One of the good pluses of the whole experience was that, you know, I did things more on my own and, you know, I didn't tell her all the time, like, what I was doing, what I was getting, because I was tired of it. And so she kind of, like, lay low about that, which was great. And of course, when I did great, when I did well, I didn't tell her, didn't do so good. You know, it was just something that I could just keep. I didn't have to, like, tell her, you know, how I was doing, because it's really not her business. And so she kind of realized that, and she knew I was wanting to be a doctor for the longest time, and she's always been open about, you know, whatever makes you happy is great. And so that's always been a very wonderful thing for any parent to have, is to be like, whatever you want to do, I'm okay with it, you know, to already have that. So I knew, you know, career-wise, she's very open, and she's always told me, you know, it doesn't matter if you're going to be this type of career, like, right now, like, you never know. You can, like, I've had different careers throughout my adulthood and stuff like that, and whatever options you can get, just get it, you know. So she's been very open with careers, which is good. But yeah, there's always just that sense of, I always felt like I had to still be better, you know. And I think it's not something that she thinks about, because, you know, she's very open and stuff, but to me, I've always just sensed a vibe that, well, I'm still not reaching her expectations. I'm still not, you know, the daughter she, like, wanted, you know? And it's probably not true, but it's still just a feeling. So,
what do you think she would say if she heard you saying this?
Oh, I don't know. I don't want to know. Hopefully, all right. I mean, hopefully. I mean, it's a candid interview, so.
She's probably going to listen to it, don't you think? If it's out on a website?
I don't know if I guess if I tell her, but if I don't, maybe she won't. I don't know.
But well, I mean, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't say it at all. I'm just curious about, because you also seem aware that her perception of it may be different. And I'm thinking about myself, honestly. I'm listening to you because I find it really, really instructive to hear you. And I think I'm sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking, gosh, am I doing this to my daughter? Am I over invested in her homework and her grades and her, and even if I don't intend it, you know, does that send a signal about what she thinks my expectations are? And it's making me be very mindful about that. So I think it's really awesome that you're being so honest about it for those of us parents out here who need to kind of think about how we can be interpreted by our kids.
Well, I'm not saying that, you know, anything that, you know, I'm speaking about is good or bad. It's just my experience, because maybe it's just embedded in my genes, embedded in my personality, you know, maybe embedded in, like, always being bullied in school and stuff like that, and always seeing that I was different. And, you know, all those things put together is just my experience of how I perceive things. And I know probably my mom perceives it her way. And, you know, probably is very open to everything and, like, very accepting of me. I don't know. But, and I'm not saying that what she, being a parent, what she did to me was bad. It wasn't good. I mean, it's good in certain ways, but it's obviously not perfect, not the best, but that's to be expected. No parent is ever perfect. No parent is ever, you know, they do bad things, they do good things. They try and be there as long as, you know, they're attentive to your needs and allow you to have these other stimuluses to make you grow in all the ways you can in life. I think that's the main thing in any parent, and be, you know, loving. So, yeah.
So where do you feel like you are now? Like, how do you feel about yourself?
Well, honestly, you know, like, today is a very good day. So I am very happy. I am, you know, pleased. I'm just satisfied that, you know, I'm just, you know, trying to take charge of my life. But that's just today. And I realized over the past couple of years, especially once college started, you know, and after I kind of ended that very stressful mindset of, oh, gosh, I have to, you know, be at Barnard or, like, be at, you know, Boston University, but I'm not there, you know, or, like, think I have to be somewhere or do something or do extra things in order to be just, you know, an ordinary person. And, you know, once I realized that point in college that, you know, I was absolutely miserable, like, I've suffered from severe depression for a long time, and, you know, I have bouts of it off and on, sometimes for very long, sometimes short. You know, I'm all over the place. But once, you know, in nursing school, and it was a very stressful environment, and I was very unhappy and everything else, I was just like, I am completely done with this life. You know, I was actually to that point, which was last spring, so just about a year ago, where, well, it's more specifically, it was after an event or several events that happened last December that were very stressful. And, I mean, I've had tons of events that have been very unhappy and very stressful and very traumatic for me. But especially last December, when it's just everything just in my normal life was miserable. And then, you know, unfortunate childhood, you know, friend of mine, you know, passed away, committed suicide. After that, you know, it was like, oh my God, like, you know, I was actually thinking about doing that, you know, like, it was to that point where I was so miserable. And, you know, even had a 3 months, like, no talking to anybody. And then once I realized the only person I talked to, like, while in school was, you know, my therapist that I've had a relationship over the years. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm like in a, excuse my language, but I am like in a shithole right now. Like, I don't know like what to do to make me see another day type of thing. And so it was just really talking to her, you know, during those 3 months in Oregon, you know, trying to figure out, you know, like, just don't, you know, stop thinking about, you know, in a week, you know, stop thinking about what's going to happen and this semester. Like, just think about today. Like, did you see butterflies today? Or was it actually sunny in Oregon? It's always raining. You know, things like that. So, you know, after I needed that really 3 month long break, even for my mom, like, no, and it was very rare back then. She wanted always that, you know, every once a week, you know, texting or calling. We used to call, and I was like, no, this is too much for me. And so, you know, once after that, I was like, I have to do something different, obviously, because I haven't been happy for so long in school and, you know, just being so stressed all the time. I mean, I'm still stressed. That hasn't changed. But stress and just like, oh my gosh, like just heavy weighted feeling all the time, that, you know, I was like, okay, have a different mindset. People think, try and still think positively, because that's what I've always tried to do, or at least express positivity to other people. And I was just like, just start as clean slate, you know, just start fresh. You know, maybe meditate, try and just think about, you know, don't think about such deep questions all the time. Just think about, you know, what do you want to do today? Like, what are you interested in doing today? Like, oh, you know, let's go to a museum. You know, things like that. It's like, oh my goodness, I forgot about museums. Just, you know, understanding that life isn't about what grades you get, where you go to school, what, you know, major you'll be, you know, how gray of an income you'll get. You know, will you get married? Like, I mean, now life is, you know, composed of all those things, but life isn't defined by those. It's defined by yourself individually, what you're satisfied with, what you want to do, how you want to be a better person. I think I've tried to always self-reflect. I think it's extremely vital to humanity and to just, because I think for me, the ultimate goal in life and everyone's life is just to be the best person you can be in society. And I mean, that's how I view my life. And so, you know, once I realized that, you know, that's my goal, is just to be the best person I can be, and no one else has these expectations for me but me, then it's more okay to, you know, feel the feelings and feel like, oh my God, like I'm really upset. You know, I got a B plus instead of an A minus, or these little things that are really actually insignificant in the long run. But, you know, in that moment, it's like, you know what? It actually doesn't matter. It doesn't, you know?
It sounds like your therapist, is she out in Oregon or was she here?
She's based here. I knew her since I was in middle school. And we had an off-and-on relationship, and she was with me in high school because she also worked with my mom mainly back then, because she was at that time educational therapist as well, not just a psychotherapist, and that was what I was using her for, was mainly, you know, for my education, because I have also a learning disorder that is also not very talked about in life either.
What's your learning disorder, can I ask?
It is central auditory processing disorder, where I think my connections in my brain just don't work the same way. And I, you know, I hear perfectly fine. It's not like I'm deaf or anything like that. It's just, but what I hear is interpreted differently. And so that kind of affects everything in my life. So, and I think that's another thing that people don't quite understand, or like maybe another reason why I feel so judged or myself so self-critical myself, is I don't feel like, you know, I never understand what people, like when they're asked a question and I answer back, I feel like I never do it direct enough, concise enough, like good enough, you know, because I don't know if I understand truly what they're trying to say. And that goes in, you know, lectures and everything. And so, so back to the therapist. So she was helping me with that, as an educational therapist. And then once, you know, the spring happened, last December, I was like, come back, you know, like, can we talk?
So it sounds like the kind of precipitating, one of the major precipitating thing from the last depression was the death of your friend. And then your therapist was really there in terms of being able to kind of help you through that period.
Yeah, because, you know, I've been, as I said earlier, I've been very depressed, like since middle school, 14 or so. No, more sooner than that, like 12. because, you know, my school, I just absolutely dreaded school, going to school, and I think I couldn't communicate that with my mom very well. And I mean, I know my mom was aware that, you know, there were mean people and that I was being teased or bullied, but I don't think she knew to the extent it was. I feel like, you know, it was almost every day type of thing. And that gets to you, you know, but because I didn't understand at that time that this is actually wrong, and, you know, this is, you shouldn't be victimized like this. And, you know, but it's just, you know, you have to just, it's just getting older helps. So, I mean, also the death of my godfather when I was 10 was extremely traumatic for me. Unfortunately, having an older mom, everyone is a bit older, and you see a lot more people go at a younger age. And I, you know, having already had a lot of loss since I was basically born, you know, was difficult on me, but especially that death was very difficult. And it was because I was very close to him. I even wanted to call him dad, but it wasn't appropriate, and I didn't understand why. And he was the nicest, sweetest, gentle giant I've ever had. And he meant a lot to me. And because we only really had 5.5, 6 years with him, and he suddenly, you know, died from multiple myeloma, it was very sudden, and I didn't really understand that, you know, he would never come back. He would, you know, exactly what death meant. And so, and, you know, once he died, you know, and he wasn't there at all, you know, I just, you know, just psychologically, and I think mentally, I just changed somehow. And, you know, even to this day, I don't know how I've changed, but something happened, obviously. And it's been difficult because I didn't realize it at the time that he meant so, like, exponentially much more to me than what I thought at the time. But, you know, once I talked to the therapist and the death of my childhood friend, because she was the first that I actually knew and, you know, even seen and talked to and stuff like that, and reconnected with the therapist to talk about these things. You know, I told her about the death of my godfather, and, you know, that actually, yeah, after 10 years of now coming to the realization that I think that was a very traumatic time. And then to just have things, stress levels, you know, every year, everyone has them, you know, come up, but, and then with everything else of just feeling ugh, all the time. And then to have it happen, it's like, boom, you know, like.
You sound like you've kind of come out of come to a place, so at least now, as you say, where you're more self-accepting and you're kind of living in the moment instead of projecting ahead 5 or 10 years or worrying about whether you have a solution to your career. And I wonder if, you know, as we reflect on these things, is there anything that you think you would like to tell your younger self, or either younger adoptees or people in general, about either adoption or wrestling with school pressures? Or you think there's any bits of wisdom there? You may think, I don't have any bits of wisdom, but if there's anything you feel like you want to put out in the world, we can put it out there.
Well, firstly, I try, like, right now, I'm just a very, like, you know, trying to just stay very present. I'm not normally necessarily always staying in the present and always happy in life. It just happens to be today, and just this week. But I guess there's so many things. I mean, firstly, being adopted, I think it's one of the hardest things to go through, especially for myself and probably for many others, because it's we've had so much loss from the very start, and that so many children shouldn't have to go through that. And to be blessed with a great life coming here has been I'm very blessed and thankful, and, you know, I don't know if it's fate or just, I don't know, but, and so I am very grateful and thankful, but then also, you know, I'm very lucky, as everyone has told me before for a long time, but I guess my wisdom is that I don't like the word luck. I don't like the word thankful, really, because it's so many variables put into, you know, one person's life or one person's personality or whatever it is. And that, I think, it's just everything is just so complicated that, you know, I've had to work extremely hard to be where I am. But I've also had a lot of help. But I wouldn't call that lucky. I wouldn't call, you know, I mean, I'm grateful that, like, I've had the opportunities I've had, like, to travel, you know, at younger ages than even my mom, who didn't travel until she was working, you know. But I don't like it when people say, oh, you know, that's so lucky of you, or you should be grateful for that. It's like, yes, I am grateful, but there, you know, I've worked hard and I've had to live through so much already just being 21. And yeah, you do too. Like, I mean, everyone has a sob story. Everyone has hardships and depression and, you know, dark sides and good sides and all of that. But I don't use the word luck for me. Don't. And I guess just life, what I wish I could tell my younger self is, you know, not to say that, you know, don't dream so high or don't go, you know, have, you know, don't set yourself so high. It's not really that. It's just don't be so into the outcome. Be more into the process of doing it. You know, be invested in the process of your life, the process of your journey, the process of who you are, building yourself to be just good, just doing something good, trying to be happy, you know, seeing the good sides of life, you know, going through hardships, but then overcoming it. But just, you know, don't think about, oh my gosh, I am going to fail this. Oh my goodness. Don't think about the result all the time. I mean, it's important to sometimes think about that, you know, it's very, you know, to plan, you know, logistics of your life. Like, oh, I definitely need to keep this job and I shouldn't quit even though I hate it because I don't have another job, you know, so that's important, but to not always think, oh, you know, what am I going to get? Or, you know, if I do all these things, am I going to be a poor student? Don't think that. And I think I wish I told myself to not have such, you know, life, like, you know, threatening, you know, like, oh my goodness, this is going to ruin me type of feeling all the time of just even the little things. And I guess my words of wisdom for, you know, just life is just, you know, it's very true. As you get older, things just seem to flip more into place. And of course, there are tons of great days, tons of bad days, you know, 1 month of depression or whatnot, whatever. But that's life. And everyone goes through it at some point. And, you know, for me, I've unfortunately been through a lot. But, you know, that it's just doing it day by day, just enjoying, you know, something that makes you happy and grateful and thankful that you're here, or doing something to someone else, you know, or thinking about someone helps.
I wanted to ask you about your origins. You came home at 4. Do you know anything at all about your birth family? Do you want to? Have you been back to China? Do you want to go back to China? Where are you with all of that?
Well, when I came to the U.S., we had no idea anything. And so then I did return, and my only time I've been back to China, but we went to Beijing when I was 9 years old. And so that was the only time I've been back. And we went to visit the orphanage twice. The first time was to, you know, just see if anyone else recognized me and just to see the place again. And then the second time was we had $700 to donate or more, and we had the money, and we wanted to go with them to get the stuff to make sure that they were actually using it properly, which they did. And so that was great. But the first time, yeah. So we go back, and there's some people who recognize me. One person who I knew, but she straightened her hair, and so she looked completely different, because when, you know, she was, the last time we were together, she had curly hair. She had a perm. And this time it was her natural straight hair. And so that was really funny. But yeah, there were a lot of some new people, but some people who stayed and they recognized me. And of course, we couldn't communicate in Mandarin, so we had an interpreter. And then there was even what was so surprising and lucky was that there was this woman who apparently took my referral picture. And so I don't remember her, but she remembered me. And so she was there, and that was really cool because she was like, I took your picture. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't really remember what you looked like. But so that was really good. And then I got to see the kids. They did a dance for me. I kind of got the special treatment where I actually got to see one of the little rooms that had the one-day-old babies in the incubators, which was just astonishing that such things like this happen. And then, you know, I learned more about, saw the school more. There was a computer room. The walls were actually bright and beautiful and colorful and so kid-friendly, which was completely opposite from when I was there, unfortunately, where the, you know, the walls were gray and just so dismal looking and, you know, not as fun and, you know, bright and stuff like that. And so then, I saw some of the kids do dances for me, and they were so cute. And you know, got to just peruse around the huge building. And then they told me, we tried to, through the interpreter, tried to find out more about my background. Like, did they know my parents? Like, what are they for sure dead? Like, where are my siblings? Do I have any? And, of course, they didn't know anything about that, which was very unfortunate. But kind of, I mean, we both came there not really having any expectations. And so the only thing we found out was we tried to get our file, but I don't know, my mom was doing that, and I, you know, they said that they didn't have it, or I don't know, but we didn't get our file, my file. And, but they told me that I was, of how I was found, and the story is that I was left on the subway November 31st, I believe, in 1995. So I was about 10 months old, roughly. And I was in a basket. I had like a little hat and, you know, some sweatshirt or something, because it was freezing. It was snowing at that time. It's winter there. And I was in a basket. Nothing else was in there. You know, sometimes I've heard stories. A lot of the occasions I've heard, you know, those kids who are, or babies who are left, their parents or families leave something. Well, in my case, they didn't, except maybe a post-it, my presumed birthday, but who knows. And so I was in the basket on the subway, there the whole day and night. And the next day, on December 1st, I was apparently crying. And a bystander, and apparently a woman, I don't know how they know this, but they said it was a woman, heard a baby crying, and saw, you know, a basket being left. And from there, she, you know, just did the normal thing, took it to the police station, which then took it to the orphanage. And then I was evaluated, probably, and that's how I got the name Hua Bingqian, which means the pretty girl in the wintertime, because Hua was a surname that was used for all the girls being put into the orphanage that month. And then they picked my name, Bingqian, because, you know, I was a girl and it was the winter and they thought I was pretty, I don't know.
So Hua, flower, Bing, coal, Chen, girl.
Pretty, yeah.
Pretty, Chen, pretty, that's right. So how did this experience of going back, did you have an essentially positive feeling about it when all was said and done? Did you have mixed feelings about it? What was it like emotionally to, I mean, I know it's asking you to kind of remember back to being, you know, 9 years old, but, and maybe you don't have any memory of how it felt, but I'm just curious, is this an experience that you think was good to have? Is an experience you think you might have had at a different age, or I don't know.
Well, I remember being excited to go. My mom had postponed it, or we canceled the trip the first time because the SARS outbreak was the year before, and so we, you know, we went the year once everything was cleared. And I just remember, you know, it's like, ooh, I get to go back. I was only 9, so I feel like it's still a very young age to really understand, you know, what was, you know, what the whole point of it. I mean, the point was just to see China, to be, you know, we toured a lot. We were with a group that I believe is no longer, you know, in doing programs anymore. It was with a whole bunch of other families who had, you know, a daughter or a son or, no, daughters, you know, who were also adopted from China. And so it was kind of like, you know, a comfortable group to be around. And we got to tour China. And I just love traveling. So, I mean, I loved it. It was a great experience. It was about 2 weeks at the time. The pollution was much less. Now it's horrendous, unfortunately. But being able to see the orphanage again was great, knowing that the kids there were in better hands than when I was there, you know, considering that they got a lot of money since I left, which is great to hear. Bittersweet, because, you know, I found out that they have kids up to 16, and then when they're 16, they can't have them anymore, so they just go on the streets, and that was very hard to hear. but it was good to help him out also with going to Children's IKEA. That's where they used our donated money to help the kids there. So that was really good to help him out. And, you know, I'm glad that at least I got something of my history, just a little glimpse of it. I mean, of course, I would love everything. But, you know, we just even in hindsight, you know, I can't expect much. I mean, especially being left in the capital of China, you know, it's just a lot of my friends, they weren't in that same situation. A lot of them, like, usually when we used to be participating in the FCC between the New Year's events in Northern California with the amazing Peggy Scott, you know, we had always this map of China, of where all the Chinese adoptees, you know, were from. And I was always the only one from Beijing, China for a long time. I don't know if it's changed now, but I was always that one from the capital, and everyone else was, you know, Guangdong province, I don't know where, you know, other places. And so I just cannot expect that much, you know, to get out of it unless I actually invest at least a year or at least a good amount of research time, you know, being in China, interviewing, knowing Chinese, having good people to help me to really know, which I hope to, maybe.
So you think maybe someday you would want to try and do a birth parent search?
I've always wanted to know. That's a bit of a lie. I've always wanted to know. Yeah, I kind of wanted to know my birth parents, but I actually really want to just know if I have siblings. I mean, that would totally rock my world if I knew I had a sister or I had a brother or whoever. And actually from the movie Somewhere Between, which is an amazing documentary, they talked about, you know, at the end they have some statistics about children of adopted families and just children being left in orphanages and stuff like that, that a lot, like a huge percent, 95 something percent of them have at least one other sibling, because I mean that's one of the main reasons that they're in the orphanage in the first place, is that they actually do have family of some kind, but you know, it's just too many, you know, for that family to hold on to. So I have a hope somewhere deep down inside that, yeah, I have, you know, a sibling, hopefully a sister, because that would make everything amazing, somewhere out there. But I just feel that it's just so hard to think that it'll actually happen, because it's just so big of a challenge and so many people involved and just so much that I don't really want to get my hopes up until, you know, actually, like, yeah, I'm actually going to China for a year to figure this out, you know, or yes, like there is through DNA testing or something, you know, they like, oh yeah, you have a connection here or something, but I don't know. We'll see.
I've talked to a number of adoptees now, and when we talk about the question of a birth parent search, almost all of them answer as you did, which is, yeah, it would be interesting to find birth parents, but what I really would love is to find a sibling. And I'm interested in why you feel that is more compelling. I mean, I almost wonder why we aren't on birth sibling searches, because I hear that much more from the adoptees I've been talking about than birth parent, do you know?
Well, I think I think that's extremely important. Like, it would be great if there was some type of platform that we could have to find such things. Those people. And why for me it's so important more about siblings than parents is that I don't really want to know if my birth parents were drug addicts, were criminals, were like terrible people. I don't really want to know that. Like, I just don't want to know. And hopefully, you know, that they were amazing parents, and hopefully, you know, they were great and caring and wonderful people, but I don't want to know if they were bad. I just don't want to be affiliated with them. Plus I have a mom, like I have family here, that are basically family, but I've never had siblings. And so many of my Chinese, like, just friends, let alone Chinese adopted friends, have, you know, their parents adopted another, whereas my mom didn't, because it was just too much. And so I never got that opportunity. And so to me, it was always the one another very heart-wrenching thing for me to accept that I didn't have, you know, another companion to be with, because it's been very hard for me to, like, you know, just because I'm a person who loves that kind of connection, or I've always, whenever I heard of my friends who are very close to their siblings, and I'm like, well, I didn't have anybody to talk to. I didn't have, you know, I had to make my friends, and because friends were hard to make for a long time, for me, you know, it was like kind of more lonely, and it kind of was very hard. And so to me, it was much stronger for me to be able, hopefully, to find that, because then I'd be like, oh, I have my dream, or one of them, you know, to actually have a connection. And plus, siblings, they're your family. They're a connection. They've, you know, whether they're step, half, whatever, or full, you know, siblings, they're a part of your DNA. But they're not completely your parents, you know? So they're just like a family member who has your DNA, has your genes, whatever, looks maybe like you, so you can kind of see yourself on the outside, but also are kind of your age, if not they're older or younger or whoever age, you know, it's still not quite like a parent. It's more of a friend, you know, sibling relationship.
Yeah, it sounds like in a way it doesn't carry the risks of potentially finding out a story that is a sad story, a really maybe sadder than you're really prepared to want to hear. It feels like it has all the potential of a happy reunion with another peer who you have this very profound, deep genetic connection to, but it doesn't, and lifelong, and it doesn't care, but it doesn't carry the risk of whatever the story may actually be, which it sounds like you have certain, you're not entirely sure you want to hear.
Yeah, I just don't, because I don't have any expectations, I don't want to get my hopes up that, oh my goodness, my birth parents are these amazing people or famous or great people, when actually that's false. And, you know, or even just dead, you know, like, you know, that's what the orphanage said. I was a foundling, which is, you know, my parents died. You know, and so then I'm like, okay, well, if they've died, you know, if that's because they can't find them in the database, then I'm like, okay, you know, I'm just okay with knowing that, you know, I at least have a mom, but if I could have siblings, that would be even better, because it's a lifelong relationship, and it's like, oh my goodness, I have, you know, hopefully that friend for life, like, no matter what. And that, I think that's something that, you know, people who have siblings like that should be very grateful for.
Tell me why you're doing this. Like, why are you participating in this? Why are you talking about all? Because you've been really honest. You've shared a lot of very deep personal stuff about some of your challenges. And I'm wondering why you feel like that's something you want to do.
I think this interview, this, you know, what you're doing is so vital for people who are adopted, no matter where they're from, but, or even domestic, not just international, especially domestic now, because that's even less talked about. To me, it's so important to not only our community, our people, but to people around the world, to people within America, to in foster care and who are adopted or just living in foster care, or, you know, and even especially, like, because of my experience, you know, to the people who have the regular so-called normal life, you know, of being born here, being, you know, having a sibling, having this regular, you know, just situation that, you know, they're lucky to have and are grateful to have, that we have a different experience, and, you know, to open each other's eyes. I think to have a platform where people can talk about it, to talk about their issues, their greats, their, you know, all everything in between, and to have it where people can, from all walks of life, can, you know, come and either relate to some part of it, to relate to none of it, relate to all of it, have a connection with each other, I think, is so important, and to understand one another, where we all come from. Everyone has a different backstory, a different, you know, hardships, and yet we are all just human in the end. We're all just people. We're all just learning as we age. We all have gone through deaths, yet it might, you know, how we deal with it is very different, how it affects us is very different, but we've all been there. We've all, you know, have had parents, we've all had, you know, connections with other people you never thought you could have connections with. And I mean, that's just so important to understand, is that, yeah, we're really much more relatable than we act like, and that's crucial.
Well, is there anything that you want to add? Because we're almost done. We can add more later. But is there anything that you feel is really pressing that you want to get down now?
I'm sure tons more things about being adoptive, about my life, will come. But I guess one thing for sure is that adoption shouldn't define us. You know, everyone, and ever since I knew what adoptive was, what being adopted meant, that my mom wasn't really my mom, and yet I call her mom. You know, that it's just such a weird concept. You know, so mixed with different emotions, different, you know, it's like, great, you know, I have a mom, but yet she's not really my mom. Like, I don't know where I'm from. You know, like, there's so many mystery in it, and yet, you know, she's been there like a mom, and, you know, and that kids, when I was in elementary school, were very difficult with me, but then learning that I was also part of it, like, it wasn't that I was perfect, and, but I try and understand where people are coming from, to not judge them, to be open-minded, to accept them, to like learn how to, if I did something wrong, to learn from it. And I think that's very important. And that, you know, like, people have assumptions, which are very annoying. Stereotypes are very hard to deal with, because it's an everyday basis.
You mean about being adopted, or about being Chinese, or both?
Everything, being adopted, a lot of, because I don't have a dad, I don't have siblings, and I've been, you know, through school, almost everybody, like in high school and, you know, my private middle school, they all had at least one sibling. And they're like, whenever I say, oh, no, I don't have any siblings at home, I only have a mom, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, like, you know, my parents, like, my dad died, or like, I just, or, you know, some, or I, you know, like, why don't you have siblings? Or, oh, that's so sad you don't have siblings. You know, like, poo-hoo, you. Or just assuming that, you know, I have this normal, right, so-called family life, when it's not true. And, you know, to just make those assumptions are very...
Sounds like you want people to recognize that there is no normal, quote-unquote, family life, that families come in all different ways, that they are formed in different ways, and you wish there weren't. Tell me if I'm putting words in your mouth. What I'm hearing you say is you wish that people just understood, when they imagine family, that there isn't really one picture they should have in their minds, and that if your family is constituted differently than what they consider to be a normal family, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why being brought up in such a liberal, accepting environment is so... I'm grateful for that. A lot of adoptees don't necessarily have that, necessarily, you know, whether international, domestic, whatnot. You know, don't have that type of situation where your environment is so diverse in every way, not just by race, but by... you know, family life, or, you know, even just individually, you know, your life. I think that has been very important and helpful to me being able to think this way, because I've had friends who are accepting, or, you know, have had been in just an environment where it feels accepting and feel like you're not... your life is normal, even though it's not normal to, you know, what, you know, in a bubble is like, which is some places, and quite a few places. And I think having that mindset just helps everything else. It just helps, you know, maybe like if everyone can kind of, and I know it's a very difficult thing to say this, but, and I'm not putting words in people's mouths, but especially for me, being able to be open-minded has helped me be open-minded to things I were very judgmental about, you know, in people, not just myself and other people. And I think if people, if my peers or adults or everyone in life can be able to expand their horizons with whatever they're finding challenging, is important into just helping humanity be, you know, more accepting, more diverse, more integrative into building each other up.
Well, thank you for sharing your story.
Anytime.